Oh, okay, great.
And Tom, if you do publish something, I'd love to buy it.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah, always. I sent you an email to that effect because I heard about the books and I got excited. It's hoping that you were doing something like that.
Now, listen in. Here we are, everybody. It's time to go to work.
This is Small Business Conversations on PBN, brought to you by Profits Plus Solutions. Increasing your profits plus building your business for the future. We are Profits Plus. You can find us at profitsplus.org. This is Small Business Conversations on PBN, the Profitable Business Network. Now, the host of Small Business Conversations, principal of Profits Plus Solutions, here is Tom Shea.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Small Business Conversations. This is Thursday night, February 6, 2020. Welcome all of you come to join us. Thursday nights are a tradition with us once every month for a whole lot of years. We get together and have a conversation. We find an expert who is a kind person to donate their expertise and visit with us for an hour as we pose a series of questions to them and learn something that all of us can take and put applicable to our businesses. And tonight is no different, except I think we just keep getting better and better experts as we've gone over the years. Let's see. Tonight's Small Business Conversations is being recorded, as always. It will be on the profitsplus.org website in two formats, an MP3 file if you have iPhone or an Android that you want to download to listen to it, or it will be on the profitsplus.org website where you can simply click and listen to it at your leisure. Small Business Conversations is also available on a whole bunch of podcast services, which include Anchor, Apple Podcast, Breaker, CastBox, Google Play, iHeartRadio now has us, Overcast, Pandora has picked us up in the last few months, Pocket Cast, Podbean, Radio Public, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, Apple HomePlay, and Google Home. There, that's everybody who's got it as of today's date. So, tonight, we thought we were going to get into a topic that we wanted a real expert. One of the things about what goes on out in the world that kind of irritates me are we have a lot of folks out there who are self-proclaimed experts at things without really having the qualifications to go behind it. And it disappoints me that the number of small business owners are exposed to these people who kind of seem to fly by their pants. Well, tonight, we've gone to great lengths to bring in an expert who's into the aspects of visual merchandising, highly qualified, lots of credentials, and what to me is very important, an individual who invests a lot of time and money in continual learning of his trade. We were just speaking before the program started. A week from today, he's flying to the east across the pond and is going to be attending one of these giant trade shows that is strictly for his trade. And he's telling me he's going to go to Dusseldorf and Berlin and Amsterdam and London, getting to see all kinds of neat things. So our guest tonight is Joe Bear. He's from Zen Genius.
Make a wish. Count to three.
Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look, and you'll see into your imagination.
So, our guest again is Joe Bear. He is a co-founder, he's the CEO, and the creative director for a company out of Columbus, Ohio called Zen Genius. They've been around for 20 years, and they are very creative at what they do. Joe, are you there with us tonight?
I am, Tom. Thank you very much. Thank you for that kind introduction as well. And I'm happy to be here with you tonight.
You know, I appreciate a person who makes the investment that as they're going to share with people and they're going to help with people, makes an effort to continually get better. I compare your efforts to a friend of mine who is a dentist. And if I remember correctly, he had told me that he's required every 2 years to take 24 hours of live continuing education. And as much as he's a good friend and he's wandering around inside of my mouth doing all kinds of things with his all those little tools and cameras and stuff, I asked him about it one day and he says, I want to be so good at what I do, he says, that by March of each year, I will meet 2 years of the requirements of education. And I'm thinking, for someone who is crawling around my mouth, a doctor who's prescribing meds and taking care of me, and for a person who's taking care of my car and other specific professionals, and in your case, someone I'm going to call on to help make my business better, I want someone that's doing it and studying and continually working at it. And that's what you're telling me. So tell me a little bit more about your trip next week going to Europe.
Well, we're going to a show. It's called EuroShop, and it's one of the largest retail trade shows in the world, and it happens in Dusseldorf. I believe there are 16 or more different halls, each one dedicated to a different level. It's a special trade show because it only happens every 3 years. So everybody that is exhibiting there, they take extra time and attention to detail when they're creating their booths. So for us and our team that's going to be going, it's really an inspirational trip for us and a great way to connect with as you were saying, continued education of what's happening in the retail industry, you know, across the pond, and bring some of that inspiration back to us and, you know, share it with our clients and others that are, you know, we have such a wonderful community in the retail industry. So we get to share that. So
now, as you're going to Europe, one of the questions that was sent in is right down this avenue. I hear people tell us here in the United States about, you know, everything that's cutting edge is either it's Los Angeles or it's New York. And those of us, particularly as they like to move towards the South, you know, we're behind the curve. When you make a trip and you're going to Europe, what do you see as the differences in the way Europeans merchandise and the way that we merchandise in North America?
Yeah. It's, you know, the merchandising between Europe and America, and in many ways, there are similarities. You know, the largest retailers that we're looking at in Europe are, you know, some of the discount stores, the hypermarkets, the supermarkets. And, you know, you see a lot of, in those mass merchant similarities, differences come in the signage and the messaging. But really what is always special for me when I'm traveling is finding those unique small businesses and businesses that take a more curated approach to their product. And, you know, we were talking at the office today with Jalpa from my team about the difference in customer service, and here in the States it's a little more self-explanatory and we're a little more independent, and it's very much service-based in Europe, and that comes through in how many of the shops, stores, and businesses are merchandised. So I'm always looking for, you know, unique experiences when we're out there.
So when you say they are more service-oriented, if we're going to the mass merchants, I'll pick on someone such as a Target.
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying that the Target equivalent that you would see in, say, Germany is not going to have starting out with self-checkout counters?
No, I think in that area of retail, I do see more similarities in how the stores are set up and how, you know, the element has come together. Where I see more uniqueness is maybe in the smaller specialty stores. But like a Carrefour experience, which is like a hypermarket maybe, you know, that sort of experience, I see similarities to some of our shopping experiences. So I think, you know, there are differences in the approaches and the language and some of the equipment is different. But I do see similarities in the processes.
So does it become in these 16 halls, are some of these 16 halls geared towards the big mass merchants and other of the 16 halls are geared to small businesses, whether they be a chain or whether they be an independent store?
I would say for the independent stores, there are going to be a lot of halls that are going to give great inspiration as well as tools, you know, checkout services, new analytics, things like that. But I would say a lot of the show is going to be geared toward larger retailers. I mean, there's a whole hall that's sort of dedicated to refrigeration. You know, so different types of ways to, you know, keep the food and the products safe. So I signed up. I get to go through that hall. I'm excited. I like to see what they do in the refrigeration hall. But, yeah, I guess it depends on the type of retailer you are and the type of business you have and, you know, whether that would be important to you.
And is there a hall that deals with, say, lighting?
Absolutely, yeah. Again, from a visual perspective, that one's always exciting for me, you know, because it's about lighting, but they also get creative with the visuals and the displays that they are lighting. So in that hall, I get to see, you know, some of the more unique visual displays where I feel like they have a little more creative freedom because they just really want to feature how the light affects the product or how cool some of the lighting is, the lighting designs. And, you know, that like for a smaller retailer or a small business, one great light that you would find, you know, can make a difference in the experience in your business.
So as you go to Dusseldorf and you're at this show, and you see some new cutting edge ideas,
yes,
how far down the timeline will it be that we would begin to see some of these things appear in Mid-America?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, some things immediately, I think there will be buyers and, you know, designers that are going to the show that are actually looking for things that they can implement in projects coming up. Other things, like, let me see, robotics, which we're not talking about, is a big, you know, element. I think I first started seeing that maybe... Well, 3 years ago, I feel like it was just bigger, and maybe 6 years prior to that was when you first saw just the mention of it. So, you know, I would say within that 3-year cycle until the next EuroShop, you'll see those things cycle in.
And I'm curious about this: when you go to the show, do you get to take your cameras? Can you take pictures of all this neat stuff, or is that taboo?
Cameras and videos. You know, I think you always want to ask permission. I'm not. I think you need those things to reference as you're doing the projects. So it's really important to do that. So we do our best to record it and, you know, use that information, compile it, share it with our you know, internal team to keep everybody up to speed, inspire them, and then we put something out there that, you know, people can learn more and experience EuroShop if they're not able to attend.
Okay. So now for the rest of us here in North America, if we're not going to hop the plane and travel with you over to EuroShop, what do we go see in either, say, Toronto, New York, somewhere in the United States? What do we go see here?
Go to RetailX. It's in Chicago. It's in June this year. And it's our biggest. It's an annual trade show. And it's our biggest trade show. You know, I can't say that it's 16 halls, but that's better on your feet in the end. And it's a combination of our classic trade show has been called Global Shop, which I've been going to Global Shop since I was a young trimmer at Lazarus, you know, thinking about that. And now it's combined Global Shop with RFID and Retail Tech Talks. So that's June in Chicago. It was on
and
March,
I would get,
but now it's in the summer. Yeah.
I would guess from the way you describe the size of it, this takes all of McCormick Place?
I believe so. At least, I don't know if it's both north and south, but it's definitely at least one whole side of it. So, yeah.
Okay.
The big show. And I understand it continues to grow.
Keeps going. They'll have to go to Vegas in the new hall when it gets opened up next year.
That's right, yeah. Global Shop used to be in Vegas. It was in Orlando a couple of times. But really, Chicago is where its home has been.
Okay. So as people are listening tonight from all kinds of businesses, and you're looking at RetailX, you're looking at going to EuroShop, let's bring it into someone's business. Is there any group of rules that apply to any size of store, any type of store, any general rules of visual merchandising?
I mean, sure, there are basic rules that I do a lot of teaching about when it comes to how to organize the product. A lot of times I break it into two categories where I tell people that visual is about the creative and merchandising is about organizing the product and how much product you need to get out on the shelves, what your capacity levels are. So there's a whole set of basic principles and guidelines that I teach about that. Very standard things like vertical merchandising and horizontal merchandising and how to use pyramids. And I think combining those basic rules, you know, and principles, techniques based on your business, your sales numbers, your inventory levels, your key items, you know, and determining which rule or technique is best, you know, based on the situation with what you have. And then I also tell people break the rules also. They're rules, but they are guidelines. So to say one way is right across every retail store, it's sort of hard to narrow that down. But I do think each business or retail needs to determine which are the right basic rules, you know, for their experience.
Could there be rules that would apply, say, regionally? This is the way you do it in the South, Upper Midwest. This is what they want. West Coast wants something different. Are there territorial rules for retailing?
I would say I think there are regional influences. I wouldn't say rules. Just like trends, though, you do sort of see, regional influences and in how things are set up. How things are merchandised, how they're the signage, the communication, the graphics, that layer of it always has, I think, is stronger when it has a regional influence. And I would say, you know, depending on where your business is located, you know, some shopping districts are, you know, more sophisticated. So you do want to say to that target group, or, you know, make sure you fit in and provide a level of expectation for that customer?
Okay. You mentioned originally about coming from Lazarus. All right. Well, some of us know what Lazarus is just because we've been in retailing so long. But there's a bunch of us. You want to explain Lazarus?
I mean, it goes back to the history of retail. Is there are these amazing family-owned department stores, you know, that really sort of shaped the retail scheme, you know, in both Europe and America. And I, as a visual merchandiser, that's where my start came. And, you know, at the time, that's the only place that I even knew that there was a visual merchandising career or a window display career. You know, we've had our trade has had so many different terms over the years. We were window dressers, we were the display team, and then we were the visual merchandising team. But yeah, Lazarus was a classic department store, and now has, you know, it's evolved into what we all know as Macy's today.
Just like for those in the Southeast, it was Rich. And in Florida, it was Macy's.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember who it was in Texas.
Texas was Dillard's?
No, Dillard's is Little Rock.
Little Rock, okay, of course. You know.
Yeah, Dillard's goes back. I have connections to the Dillard family, so yes, I remember Dillard's.
Okay, Arizona was Goldwater's and the Broadway, Emporium Capital, and California. So yeah, really the classic department store format really, I think, created what became known as the shopping experience.
And who was Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh, I don't know. I want to say Kaufman's, but I don't know.
Oh, because there's a quote about him. Wanamaker. That's who it is. Wanamaker's was Pittsburgh.
Yes, I know that.
John Wanamaker was the head of that family. And you know, an old John Wanamaker quote was, I know half of my advertising does not work. I just don't know which half it is.
That's good.
So,
it wasn't the merchandising half.
No. Hey, we are at just third through the show. Let me tell everybody, our guest tonight is Joe Baer. Joe is co-founder, CEO, and creative director of Zen Genius, headquartered in Columbus, Ohio. To go see more of what they do, you look at zengenius.com. That's ZENGENIUS.com. The phone number for their company is 614-220-9040. And with that, we take a very quick station break.
This is PBN, the Profitable Business Network from Profits Plus.
So we're discussing ideas with Joe here about what is there to see and observe stuff. So let's take it into some people's businesses. I can remember at a young age learning an old adage that said, there's five senses. And one of the keys is you want to see as a retailer how many of the five senses you can possibly touch as a way to find what engages a customer. Is that still true? Does that still work?
Absolutely. I think it's important to try to touch on those senses and bring them in. You know, I'm a hero for the sense of sight, obviously visual, because that's what my world is, and I know how important that element is. But, you know, if you don't have the right scent when that customer walks into your store or business, you know, that will deter their experience. The same thing with the sound. You know, some people can't stand it when there's no sound when they go into a store. So we're human. You know, and I think our senses are what make us feel comfortable. You know, they put us at ease. They, you know, I think give us a sense of excitement when they're invigorated. But I think it's really important that customers pay it, or that businesses pay attention to that. All types of businesses, retail stores, a service business. When I walk into a bank, it's important to me.
Is this why I'm seeing banks today who are now calling them, no longer calling themselves banks, but calling themselves labs and...
And cafes, right?
Cafes,
where you can go in and, you know. I haven't experienced that yet, but I'm really curious, you know, to try that. But
I walked into a Chase. I wanted to go see it and experience it, of which...
Yeah.
You know, I got the idea as to, ooh, I walk in, this looks different. It's got a bit of a different feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
But they couldn't quite carry it off. I can remember here was a wall with four offices, okay, not cubicles. Everybody had little walls, but it was, here's four people sitting in their little room. Their door is closed, and when you walk in, here's two chairs, and this, they're just common chairs, and here's this person in the bank sitting facing you, their backs to the wall, and they're sitting with a swivel office kind of chair, and I go, that didn't quite pull it off for me. It's like, if you're going to change, you got to drastically change, and I think strategy-wise, anytime you've got a counter, a desk, or something like that, I think that's standoffish to a customer.
Yeah. I think, you know, so many of them are exploring what the right answer is and what the right environment is for that service. And I think, you know, in a lot of ways with the brick-and-mortar stores, the bank experience is changing for the customers. You know, the way we use... you know, a place like that. So I think paying attention to whether it's more friendly to come in and, you know, see somebody sitting, you know, and walk up, or if you do walk up to the traditional counter experience. So I think, you know, I really celebrate the banks and the businesses that are at least experimenting, you know, to see what the right answer is. You can speculate all day, but really... give it a try and see.
Do something different. Try something. You learn more from your mistakes, and you get a new starting point that's closer to the answer with every failure that you have.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think observing is a part of that process. You know, we'll design things on paper, and, you know, we try to pay attention to every detail. But sometimes until you're standing there and you observe how the guest or the customer uses the space, you know, then you have that aha moment, like, oh, you know, let's try this now.
So when I have a store and it's smaller square footage, I mean like 1,500 square feet or something to that size range,
mm-hmm.
but when I get above that, is it true that I can steer a customer through the store simply by the size, the width of the aisles?
Absolutely. The signage, the placement of the visuals, the placement of the displays or your key item presentations. Even in a small store and large stores, you know, that's what so many designers are focusing on is this, you know, the customer journey, that path. And trying to direct them in a certain way, but also not be surprised when they don't go that way. You know, they so.
Is it true that customers still have
a?
Okay, is it true customers have a tendency to look and would lean towards walking in the direction that they would drive a car to the right?
That's always been the rule that I've heard, that we have that inclination to go to the right. And, you know, I think the beauty with modern retail and business and technology is now you can install analytic equipment that helps you, you know, determine which way, and, you know, the majority of your customers are going. So, you know, I think we were always forced to go right. Then grocery stores started experimenting with forcing customers to go to the left to throw us off, you know, take us out of our game. Yeah, and then in Europe, I was always told, you know, like you said, that they tend to go to the left if they drive on that side of the road.
Okay.
We'll pay attention to that while we're there and see if we can
see what
sure
it gives.
That's still current.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're at the bottom of the hour. We have station breaks, and even though we don't have commercials, we have our guest guide us in picking songs that we're going to play. And we'll ask Joe about this choice when we come back. And a couple of questions I want to ask you about is cash registers and Starbucks. So quick station break. Okay, so that we got to ask Joe, why are we playing that song, Joe?
Is it sticking with you? Don't you love that? I mean, we're playing that song because it's a classic flashback to the movie Mannequin. And for many people that are not really sure what visual merchandising is, that movie is what they think of. So that song by Starship was the theme song. Kim Cattrall, do you remember? She was the mannequin that comes to life. Andrew McCarthy is the window dresser. So that's a flashback for you.
It is. Well, actually, because I like old TV, did you ever see the one, I was going to say part of Mannequins came from, the Twilight episode of Mannequins?
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's a classic.
The old Rod Serling show where the mannequin came to life and you've had your turn, now you got to go back and stand.
That's probably why more people are afraid of mannequins, actually, than falling in love with them like Andrew McCarthy. So, but then I also love that song because it had a positive message, Tom, right? We can build this dream together, standing strong forever. Nothing's going to stop us now. I mean, that's a good positive message. That
it is. I am a hopeless romantic for retailers.
It's hard work. It really is. So you got to keep that dream alive.
But some people like you and I, it got into your blood at a young age and you did it forever. I mean, one of my very first experiences of learning aspects of merchandising was my father had three stores when I was very young, and we're driving down the road one day, and he said, who do you think my favorite store manager is? And I go, oh, this has got to be a trick question. And he tells me who it is, and, okay, Dad, why is this? And in small rural towns, You had tables that had merchandise on it. I think the table was basically like a sheet of plywood and wooden counters and storage place built underneath it. And we had a gentleman in the town of Marlton, Arkansas, by the name of Fred Kindred. And Fred came up with the idea, because when you would merchandise, say, like men's shirts, you know, they came in plastic bags. Well, you know, even today's world, they come in plastic bags, and some stores take them out of the bags and some don't. But when you go to stack them, it's a pain. And this gentleman had built, taken like 1x4s and built curbs all the way around the counter so they couldn't as easily fall onto the floors. My dad's like, you know, I like seeing guys being creative. But the other one was, and as I explain this one, understand it, it is spoken in only in the utmost respect. And that is, have you ever heard of the term Jew poles?
Oh, no, I don't think I have.
Okay. Jew as in Jewish, J-E-W, poles like a pole. And my dad says, if you go back and watch the old Jewish merchants, he says they were masters of merchandising. And where most of us think about things in square feet, they thought in cubic feet. And so my dad adopted this stuff. And again, small town where I'm selling you a pair of Wranglers and some boots and stuff. And the town I grew up in, I tell my friends, and you're remembering, where did you shop? And I said, well, if you went down to Woodson's, it's because your family had plenty of money. But if you were working people, you came down to Shays, and that's where you shopped. And yeah. And we had fabrics, and we were a small time
general
store. Yeah, except it was a bunch of thousands of square feet. But you take like 1x2s and you put them vertically at the four corners of a counter. And then between the four corners, you run a string, a heavyweight string.
Uh-huh.
And you think about items that you could take and hang over that string to sell it.
Yeah.
So it could be undergarments. It could be socks. You could take two pairs of socks and run a little string between one pair to the other and hang them. And now you're not eating up valuable floor space. You put it overhead because those are the items that people had to have. They weren't fashion statements at that point in time. So you put them up overhead for people to be able to grab them. And, you know, it was things like that that got me looking, going, you know, there's a whole lot more to look at.
That thinking, which actually inspired our company's name, Zengenius, because at the root of it is being ingenious. And that's what he was. He was being ingenious, you know, looking at the product and the fixture and understanding the, you know, what do you have to do to make it work, you know, so... We try to be clever. You have to think out of the box to find those solutions. So that's a perfect example of, I might have to use that story, Tom.
Take and run. All right. Well, let me share one quick one with you because I got more questions.
Okay.
My mentor, great guy. And when I began to understand that I looked at retailing differently, and we were in a mall, back in the early 80s, and we walked by a Victoria's Secret. This is the day when Victoria's Secrets were done with dark wood and like the red velour on the walls. Their target customer was a woman or a man over 30, and the purpose of their shopping was anniversary, wedding, trip or something, and you were buying garments to set up an experience. And we're standing out in front of the store, and he says, you don't see what other people see. And I go, is this kind of like Poltergeist? You know, I see dead people or something? And he goes, no. He says, I've noticed the way that you look at the store, which my dad taught me. And I go, I believe you can walk into any kind of business and pick up an idea and take it to another kind of business. If you're in a clothing business and you're listening tonight, if you're in a pet business and you're listening tonight, you don't have to go from a pet store and go look at another pet store. You don't have to be in the clothing business and go look at another clothing business. You go look at any kind of retailer out there and go, what made me look? What made me turn? Why did I want to walk back into that store again? And I said, yeah. I said, here's an old trivia question. Back in the day when we listened to music on cassettes, it was Victoria's Secret that sold more classical music than any other retailer in the United States. Because when you got to the checkout counter, you had been walking through the store and you heard classical music playing and they had cassettes there at the counter and people would pick them up. We're buying this for, it's our anniversary weekend, we're going away, and this must be a part of it, is to, you got to listen to this kind of music. And I go, this is brilliant. This is just absolutely brilliant. But how can I take that into my store? And I think that's what people need to practice looking at, is your eyes are always open to any kind of store and go, what got your attention? And how do you take it back to your own store?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's, we are inspired by that. You know, it's good to look at your competitors, but also, you know, keep an eye on the broader retail scene or business scene, you know, because customers' expectations are not just formed when they're in your shop, you know. Think of, like, our drugstore experience and how that has changed and evolved over the years. You know, and now that expectation for customers when they're going to shop for basics like that influences them when they're in your store, your business. So, and take that inspiration. I mean, that music program, I remember that you do that, and Starbucks has a great, great program, you know, where they feature their artists and you can buy that music. So, celebrate your local musicians also. You know, local music is a great thing to celebrate. But I don't know, what do we, you said cassettes, which really dated us a little bit, but now even CDs. Do we buy CDs anymore? Now it's
the secondhand download shop.
Well, hey, that's where I'm getting my vinyl again, so full circle.
Yeah. Okay, so this aspect of visual impressions to people, right? Why is this so important? I mean, you obviously, and your whole team spends a lot of time with this. Why is this so important?
I think, one, ultimately, it gives the customer confidence in you by how your business looks, how your, you know, the experience, how you're presenting your store name, your business name, when they walk into your space, you know, the way that visual experience is, really in a matter of seconds can determine whether they're going to have a good experience or whether they have faith in you as a business person, or, you know, confidence. And I think it also, money is important. It also elevates the perceived value that you're getting from that product or for that service, you know. So I think that visual experience can be, you know, really one of the most important parts of that customer experience and their satisfaction.
So this is a very broad question, but I think it's one that we got a lot of people tonight looking for some concrete take-home type of things. And that is, so without you seeing anybody's store who's here tonight, you know, what would you tell people is a list of things as to, here's what you need to do to improve this this visual merchandising, this visual presence. Here's some things that when you walk into your business tomorrow morning, or even all the way out to the road, I think of a person by the name of Brett Beamer, who wrote a book called Predatory Marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And while I know the book's on the shelf somewhere here in my library, the statistic that has hung with me forever says 53% of the impression a person gets about a business comes from when they can first see the business.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I were a business, a freestanding business, or a strip center, or in a mall, or in a lifestyle center, then with several of those, your first impression could be when you see my sign from a quarter mile away. Is that how you would read that?
Sure. Yeah, the sign can be the first impression as you're approaching the store. You know, I always tell people start either in the parking lot or out in front. You know, what is the first? Where is the customer going to get it? You mentioned a strip mall for a lot of small businesses also. You know, you're also, your neighbors are a part of that impression. You know, so when a strip of small businesses, when they all band together and, you know, they create a look to their strip, you know, by adding greenery or, you know, nice landscaping or some flags or something. You know, I think that elevates the impression. So depending on your situation, you know, look at the whole thing. If it's a standalone store or business, you know, to me that impression is as you're driving to the store or when you get out of the car and you're in the parking lot. You know, do a walkthrough. I think it's such a great exercise. When you go in tomorrow, go in with the fresh eye, get it, stand out front, look at, and you know, I tell people it's anything you can see as a part of visual merchandising. So
if you had a business that your colors were, say, pink and black, could we go crazy and say, I got an idea, let's go get some parking lot paint. You buy it at a hardware store, comes in a gallon, it's usually white, and say, tint it pink and let's paint the stripes in our parking lot pink just to be cool.
You know, I think some of those branding elements are great, you know, and if I see that, I mean, there's a great parking lot I went into and I got out of the car next to the line, next to the stripe, they had written a little quote. So, you know, I think unique features like that help stand out. Now, I'm also going to say, observe, that could be a great idea, Tom, but if you realize that the accidents in the parking lot go up, then you might want to find other ways to bring those branded colors in. But yeah, I think bringing that character outside, you know, I love, like, IKEA, I think, is a great example, because when you park your car and you see the branded corrals out front with messaging, and, you know, a lot of times when they're maintained right, there's twine that you can tie things, or, you know, sanitizer for your hands, and it all has a branded message, and it's in their colors, and the signage reinforces their voice and their personality.
So let me ask you this question. I don't want to put a number to it, but what would you say are the top, fill in the blank for your number, issues, problems that you most frequently see happening with businesses that you go, oh, if you would just pay attention to this detail, your business would be seen a whole lot differently?
Yeah, I mean, lack of attention to detail is one of them. And it's so easy, you know, for those details to get out of control. But clutter is a huge one that I see. It gets me. I think it can be visual clutter, whether it's too much signage, too much visual distraction, or even just clutter with too much stuff, whether it's too much products or, you know, some stores want to be boutique, but it comes across more cluttered than boutique. And then I guess that, you know, that lack of attention or the apathy that the visual experience doesn't matter. And I see everything. Scotch tape signs, you know.
Ooh.
Handwritten.
Burnout lights.
Burnout lights, broken fixtures, you know, those details. And again, most people wouldn't think that falls into a visual merchandising area, you know, but I see those details. If I'm standing at the checkout and I'm buying something and I look behind the checkout and I see all the clutter that's back there, you know, that's a part of my final impression before I leave that store. You know, if I'm shopping and there's like a stockroom door open and you get a view into the back, especially if I'm in a restaurant, and then you get a view sometimes, you know. So pay attention. Mm-hmm. The detail is everything. Of course, there's that old quote, retail is detail. But it is, you know. It's paying attention to where everything is. We have a saying. It sort of reinforces the Zen in our name. But everything has a right place at the right time for the right reason. And I do believe that. And I think that's our goal is, you know, when you're open for business, just like when you're about to throw a party at your house, everything's ready to go. You know, everything's in the right spot.
I could see that. I at Christmas time, I had someone, I said, take me some of the stores, young person, take me some stores you want to go look at. I was in shock when I walked into a Kohl's.
I'm telling you, there's no recovery process. Is that what you experienced? What was it like?
Stuff was just dumped everywhere.
Yeah.
Just stuff piled up. And I, over in one little corner here were two young people, and you know they're putting merchandise together. And I thought, if they close this store and turn these two people loose for a week, they still wouldn't get all the crap up off the floor and back to where things are. And people would walk around from one side of the store, and you're in clothing. All of a sudden, here's a candle stuck on a shelf like someone didn't want it. And I go, how long has this been sitting here?
Yeah. I noticed it even more this year, the lack of merchandise recovery, you know, the lack of putting things back and reinforcing those standards after the, you know, customers shop it. Especially, I mean, a huge growing market of retailers are these discount stores, you know, all the dollar stores. They were a mess, you know. So there's just no that sense of pride, I think, is important in stores.
Just walk in and see signs in your window. Say, hey, here'd be one. As you're telling people today to walk into your store tomorrow morning and look at the front of the store. Somebody listening tonight has got a poster taped on their front window about some concert for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, it's almost 2 months ago. The poster's like,
yeah,
it needs to go.
I just had a conversation similar to that today. I was in a store last week, and I was like, okay, yes, the Christmas should be down by now.
Pretty good. Hey, last station break. We'll come back and talk some more to Joe.
All Business Conversations on PBN, the Profitable Business Network.
So our guest this evening is Joe Baer. And Joe is the co-founder, CEO, and creative director of a company headquartered in Columbus, Ohio, called Zen Genius, ZenGenius.com. Been around for 20 years. I have the opportunity to work with Joe on a project. I like what the guy does. I like the fact that he's invests a lot in continuing education. I just think that's essential for someone who's a professional, the time and effort. Last item we want to talk about for our closing minutes, we had a reader, Cole, who lives down here in Florida, who sent to Joe and I a report. A lot of pages to it. But as we were discussing before the show, there were 10 predictions made for the coming year. So what I'd like to do, Joe, is let me tell everyone what it is. You come back with here's your thoughts on it. And we'll see if we can get through all 10 of them in the last 7 minutes. Item number one, smarter stores. Computer vision and artificial intelligence will fuel better shopper and inventory tracking, as well as enabling more cashier-less checkouts. The power for retailers and brands to process consumer insights will be crucial, and boosting supply chain will become a priority. Your quick thoughts.
I agree. I think it's happening. I've seen evidence of it at many of the shows I've been to. Again, I think, what segment of retail are we talking about? You know, this is definitely, we'll see it in more of the larger big box hypermarkets. I'm curious to see how this will influence many of the smaller businesses.
Okay. And I'll throw my 2 cents in. For the smaller businesses, screw technology. I mean, I want you to have a point of sale system, but we look too much at what does the big boy do and we try to copy it, and we don't realize what our advantage is. The quick insight story is, Amazon, Bezos, Jeff Bezos, after he got going in the book business, said, I can never replace the experience a customer can have by going into a bookstore, have a cup of coffee, sit in a comfortable chair, take and smell that paper, enjoy the book, enjoy the coffee. I can't duplicate that. And yet I walked into a Chapters bookstore. Chapters is the Canadian version to Barnes & Noble. And in their store, they have a coffee shop, and here's a sign. And the sign says, please do not take your coffee into the bookstore. Please do not take the books into the coffee shop. And I go, why? I mean, he just told you how to beat him, and it's like you're snubbing your nose at him. I don't get it. Item two, Blue Light Special 2.0. Okay, for some of you who don't remember Blue Light Special, it's a Kmart terminology. Look for more electronic shelf tags and mobile shopper analytics to get the right deals to the right shoppers, driving loyalty and profitability. This trend will require a deeper understanding among brands and retailers of how price changes impact the basket sales. Your thoughts, sir?
I'm seeing a lot of this. Electronic shelf tags, again, I think that technology has been around, and we're going to now start to see it going more mainstream. The same with the shopper analytics. I think it's really fascinating, and I think a lot of that is actually going to be accessible for smaller businesses as well. I think there will be solutions for everybody. And I'm a fan of the Blue Light Special. I remember it, and, you know, what a great tactic that was.
Just too bad they didn't come up with something behind it. It was a neat way to get things done. Number three, just for you, artificial intelligence will enable more personalized product recommendations while brands will develop on-demand manufacturing. Some retailers and brands will know customers via facial recognition. As a result, customers will expect even more relevant experiences. What do you see in that?
I mean, I do think that's coming. What's that in the movie with Tom Cruise where we saw and he ran into the Gap? You know, I think that was our first glimpse of that as a society. And I think there some of that is coming, and there are going to be some people that are going to love it and appreciate it, and then there will be some people that are not, you know, will not want to feel that, you know, I guess what I would call it, invasive, maybe.
Yeah.
So, but definitely I think some people are going to be using it, and, you know, for some customers, it'll really make that experience amazing.
I had a listener to the program who asked me a couple of months back, said, I've seen this and I'm thinking about adding it to my business. And it was a one location business, okay, independent. And it was some piece of technology they found that you could take and come into a store, and if you did not make a purchase, you got a message on your phone from the store.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he says, what do you think? Do I jump in it? And I go, boy, not until the big boys are long into it. That's you're invading someone's privacy. I'm looking, going, how did you take and get a hold of my, not cool. Number four, level up shopping. Retailers will deploy augmented and virtual reality across platforms to enable try on, product interaction, and customer service. Watch for retailers to hire e-game developers to get their content up to speed.
Definitely agree. And I'm really hoping I'm going to see a lot of this in Europe as well as at RetailX here next year. I think the augmented reality, to me, that aspect is, I get more excited than even the virtual reality. You know, my team, they laugh at me because I'm always talking about augmented reality. But I think there's really something great there, that it's a great tool that we can use our phones, and whether we're trying on or learning more or even just being entertained. So, again, I feel maybe that's a technology that we've been hearing about for a while, that now I think we're going to start experiencing it more. So I'm excited about that one.
Okay. Five on the list, retail everywhere, car commerce, smart vending, and online to offline pop-ups will multiply. It will become crucial for retailers to expand their understanding of the customer journey to purchase.
Mm-hmm. I think it is.
Where does that happen?
I mean, the pop-ups is a great experience that we're seeing, you know, where brands can really experiment and try, you know, a new way to activate the customer or engage the customer. And, I think we're going to see definitely the smart vending. It's happening. You know, even the car commerce. I'm shopping right now. You know, and I'm like, gosh, I kind of want to check that. What is it, Carvana, where you can have it delivered? It's like,
yeah.
So, you know, that's really interesting. But I do think the retailers that expand and experiment and, you know, really try to understand that customer journey, you know, it's not about the customer walking in your door all the time. You know, maybe that was once away, but what can you do now to really engage them and, you know, connect with them, whether it's in your store or online or, you know, out somewhere in a part of their day, their journey.
So let's jump a little bit here because two of them are to go together. You'd, before we started the show, had talked about Rise of the Robots. Your thoughts?
Yeah. I mean... Seeing it in the back room is happening. I think we've seen it on the manufacturing lines for so long that now that coming into the store world, I think we're going to be seeing a lot of it. I've had my first experience when we were at a hotel in Chicago, EMC Square, where they have robots that will actually deliver, you know, water sundries to your room. I saw it at the trade show that I went to in China 2 years ago. You know, will it replace humans? No. I think even more, you know, that human interaction is going to be required. But, you know, boy, for so much of us, that customer service level has gone down. Maybe this will be a way that we can, you know, elevate that service aspect. So
folks, we ran a little overtime tonight because we were having a good time with this, but we try to keep you close to an hour. That's right. Hey, we're not national broadcast television, so we can kind of run where we want. Our guest tonight has been Joe Baer, who is co-founder, CEO, and creative director of Zen Genius. They're located in Columbus, Ohio. You find Joe this way. ZenGenius.com. You write to him, Joe Baer, and it's Baer at ZenGenius.com. You call their office. It is telephone 614-220-9040. That's where you find my friend Joe. Joe, thank you for tonight. Appreciate you joining with us. Good hour. A lot of neat stuff to talk about. And safe travels to you and all your team as you head across the pond. And when you come back, would you let us get you back on the show and give us a new report of what'd you see?
Absolutely. Happy to do.
Kind of like show and tell.
Oh, yeah. Sounds great. So right. Thank you for having me tonight.
Thanks, everybody. Glad you all were here with us tonight's program.
It has been our pleasure to share fresh ideas and trends from premier small business owners, coaches, and resources. Join Tom Shea and guests next month right here on Small Business Conversations from Profits Plus Solutions. This is PBN, the Profitable Business Network. Visit our website to learn more about us at profitsplus.org. There you will find our catalog of small business conversations, articles and advisories, news, meeting planners, calculators, and resources. Also, we invite you to connect with Profits Plus Solutions on our various social media channels. Please like or connect with us on Facebook, LinkedIn, SlideShare, Twitter, and YouTube. We have links to all our social media channels on our homepage at profitsplus.org. Thank you for joining us.